Numbers 96, 28, 32, State of Ohio, Trail Crossing Company versus James Conrad, Administrator. Mr. Wilkins.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Excuse me. Numbers Cross Edge Company, on June 12, 1993, our company purchased, actually not our company, the new Crossed Company, which at the time was TCC Acquisitions, purchased from banks, a consortium of Cincinnati banks that had foreclosed on a produce manufacturing produce distributor, old Crossed Company, purchased the real estate and all of the assets of that company. June 12, 1993 was Saturday. The purchase occurred as an asset-only deal at the time. Subsequent to the purchase, the Bureau of Workers' Compensation came back to us, to our company, the new Crossed Company, which had purchased the assets only, no liabilities whatsoever, with the exception of some accounts payable that were protected by the federal trust, which is in place to protect farmers who provide produce, came back to us and indicated that there were two open retrospective years from 1990 and 1993 and wanted us to pay all of the claims for those two open retrospective years 3 years before.
We've read the facts and we understand the facts. I'd like to get right to the law. Is this a successor corporation?
Your Honor, it is not a successor corporation. It is not a successor corporation under the common law, which is the Welco decision, and I would submit to you that it should not be a successor corporation under the workers' compensation law either.
Doesn't the statute require it to be a successor corporation in order to charge the experience of the prior entity?
Yes, sir, it does. And therein lies the major difference in my, obviously, between me and my opponent. The experience transfers from one company to another. There is no way that I can structure a deal to prevent that from happening. Let me give you an example of what the experience is. If I have a child who has a bad record, a bad driving record, I'm going to pay a higher insurance premium in the future because of that bad driving record. There's nothing I can do about that. That is just extended to basic insurance principles. And the adjudicating committee order indicates that I have no objection to that. However, if that child, because I pay higher premiums, if I take out a loan to pay those premiums, I should not, my successor should not be responsible for paying that loan. And that is the case we have here today.
Have you ever done one of these corporate mergers where you've put an indemnity agreement in so that the transferring corporation, the dying corporation, has to indemnify for additional costs the acquiring corporation? I always used to put an indemnity clause in there. Is there one year?
If we had known about the open retro years, that might have been a solution. I would suggest to you, Justice Douglas, that 412382 might invalidate an indemnification clause like that, because remember, contracts of indemnity in the state of Ohio, the workers' compensation are void.
That's for straight negligence.
I'm sorry?
That's for straight negligence.
Well, I can't
indemnify yourself against negligence. These work-related injuries, we don't determine negligence.
Well, what I'm saying, though, is that the statute prohibits any indemnification for workers' compensation in the state of Ohio. I would submit to you, Your Honor, that if we've got open retro years with claims in them, and I would be paying back the predecessor, that the predecessor could argue that those would be void, that contractual provision would be void.
How would you have acquired assets without knowing what the experience was?
It was on a weekend, Your Honor. It was June 12, 1993. Essentially, what happened is the banks came in, they foreclosed on the property, they were looking for somebody to run a produce distributor. Castellani Company set up this TCC acquisition company, bought the assets, and took over from there.
The Bureau argues, as you know, that nothing really changed after old Crossett purchased, or when old Crossett was purchased by new Crossett, that the employees apparently were the same, the business continued, and that's really what's important, and that there were a few assets not purchased, but they weren't really relevant to the business. Isn't that really the test here, rather than the purchase of assets?
Just more, I think the test is not exactly what the deal is. It's whether Welco applies to it and whether we fit into the Welco exceptions. And there are four exceptions in Welco for when a contractual liability would transfer. Keep in mind, again, that this retrospectively rated liability is a debt. And in fact, on page 66 of the record, the subcommittee of the Bureau indicated that that was the issue, whether we were responsible, New Cross that was responsible for that debt. It is a debt. It is a contractual obligation. That is our point. And if it is a contractual obligation, I would submit to you that Welco applies. Now, applying Welco, the question is, do we fit into any one of the four exceptions? It clearly was not done because of fraud. I would submit to you, Your Honor, it is not a de facto merger. It is not a mere continuation, whether we operate under the definition that you applied when you wrote Welco, or even in the dissenting definition. I would submit to you that we don't fit in either of those as a mere continuation or a de facto merger. So I would submit to you, we do not fall into the Welco exceptions. As a result, Your Honor, we should not be liable for the contractual obligations of the old process.
Have any rules that have been adopted by the Bureau changed Welco?
No, and that's a very critical point, and I'm glad that you raised that. The rules that we're talking about were promulgated after the 1986 changes to the Act, and they were promulgated in 1990. Welco came about in 1993. So I would submit to you that one of the problems we had with the rules, and I'm talking about the rule that they used to decide this case, which was the paragraph F rule, and the K rule that the Court of Appeals said they should have applied. Both of them, I would submit to you, violate the Welco common law, which came about after the rules were promulgated. We have not seen any rules promulgated since then on this issue.
As I recall the facts, wasn't Old Crossett at some point a self-insurer?
I do not believe so, Your Honor. They started in 1959. The record does include their original application for industrial coverage. They went into a retro in 1990. Keep in mind that the Bureau's year started on July 1 of every year, July 1 of 90, July 1 of 91. Both of those years were retro years. Then they went into a group rating program when we purchased them.
The reason I ask is because if New Cross that is not responsible and continuing payments are required to be made, does it come out of the surplus fund?
Your Honor,
does the state of Ohio become another creditor in the foreclosure?
Well, you know, in fact, I mentioned in my brief, I would submit to you, Your Honor, that we made a mistake here, and I don't submit that we did, but if there was a mistake made, we should have let them go into bankruptcy. Mm-hmm. Because at that point, clearly that debt would have been extinguished as to us. I would submit to you, Your Honor, that it is similar to a bankruptcy situation. I presume that the amounts would be reimbursed out of the surplus fund. I think the critical issue, the key issue in the case, again, is differentiating between the experience rating that we have no question would transfer from, no matter how we structure this deal, from the old company to the new company, and the retrospective rating plan. A retrospective rating plan is an alternative premium method. It is a method of funding one's premium. You pay a percentage, in this case, for the first year, 30% premium up front, and you make an agreement with the Bureau, and the Bureau has got to approve this. They have got to approve the financial wherewithal of the company requesting this payment plan. And you agree with the Bureau up front, or the Bureau approves you up front, and provides that you pay a small amount of premium up front, and then over the next 10 years, just as a homeowner would provide a mortgage, just as somebody would provide for payments for their car, or just as somebody would finance another insurance program. And this is as if the process went out, took out a credit card, and said, I need X number of dollars of workers' comp premiums. I'm going to finance those premiums with this card, and I'm going to enter into debt to finance that premium. That is exactly what we have here. We have an application by process, financial underwriting by the Bureau, approval of the payment plan, approval of the contract. Then for 10 years, Crossett was responsible for making those payments. Where the Bureau has erred, in my view, is in holding our client, which only purchased the assets, responsible for that debt. And again, if I could refer you to page 20 or 66 of the record, clearly even the Bureau subcommittee said in their statement of facts when they made the ruling that this was a debt.
Is there only one claim involved in this experience factor?
No, sir. There are many claims involved.
Okay. Because I was wondering how much the one claim could be and why you're all the way up here on one claim. You really only argue one claim, don't you?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
You really only are arguing the one claim. It seems to me the factual pattern set up says on this retro we have to pay this claim. But you're saying there are a number of like claims.
Okay. Yes, sir. Let me explain the way a retro works. You pay all the claims for the entire year, dollar for dollar.
Understand.
That's the retro plan. And so for a two-year period, they had a number of claims that they want us to pay. And every year you get an annual, you get a bill every year for the amount of claims. And then at the end of the 10-year period, what they do is they take their reserve and then they bill you for that. So there are a number of claims involved here. The amount of money at stake is going to change over the years. Right now, I think it's about a quarter of $200,000.
Counselor, was there a benefit to the application for transferring the rating to the new corporation? In other words, your client tripped this whole thing by saying, we're here, we're open for business, and we're transferring.
No, Your Honor, we did not ask for a transfer. There's a special form called a U-9 form, which is available for a transfer. What we did is we filed the original U-3 application. On the application, it asks on the back if you acquired a business, and you'll recall that on the back we wrote, we acquired the assets of this company from the banks. What that does is that then triggers an audit. The Bureau auditor came in and she decided just on her own, this is a full, or what they call
so
a full transfer.
Your client did not ask to have the rating experience of the prior corporation.
Sure.
You're not objecting to that, but your client did not ask for that.
That's correct, Your Honor. In fact, originally we did object to that. I thought that we could distinguish Lake Erie because we bought it from the banks. Quite candidly, I just, with all the, this is a confusing enough issue, and I just wasn't going to try to take on that issue at the time. In point of fact, the experience transfer, we were put into a group for 1 year, which was to our advantage. Subsequent to that, the bad claims came in to haunt us, and we paid substantially more than we otherwise would have had the better base rate in the quarter. So the bottom line answer to your question is, the experience transfer didn't cost us, yes.
Initially, it was beneficial, but after a year, it was a detriment.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's correct. And initially, the benefit came about because the Bureau let us go back into that group, which was to our advantage. And please, the court, I would like to reserve my remaining minutes to rebuttal. Would that be all right?
It's your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. McDonald.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court and counsel for the appellant. The issue is whether the business was transferred and not whether all of the assets were transferred.
And that's exactly where I have problems with the case. It seems to me that you have what I guess we would call in tort law maybe an intervening cause. When we used to do a number of these, it was you'd just acquire the existing corporation or you'd acquire the assets or you'd acquire whatever you were going to buy. Here, it doesn't go corporation to corporation. It goes corporation to foreclosure to bank to corporation. Now, isn't the bank an intervening entity? I know this isn't a strong argument it's made, but that's where the case is to me.
I understand that position, Your Honor, and I'm glad you brought that up because the banks in this case were clearly simply a financing arrangement. The banks did not operate any of the business. I think that is the clear distinction here.
Yeah, I understand they wouldn't have operated, but they could not have, without the bank signing as part of the foreclosure, There could not have been a transfer of the assets.
I think I would disagree with that, because I think there could have been an arrangement where the new process would have paid old process whatever would have paid whatever old process needed, as well as whatever the bank needed, without a foreclosure sale. I don't think the foreclosure sale was necessary in order for new process to take over the business of old process.
Would it be fair to ask you if I can find a closing and a disbursement statement showing that these assets were transferred as a flow-through through the bank to the acquiring corporation, that then your answer would be different?
I can't answer that question. We don't have enough documents in this record to know the details of how the transaction occurred, but we do know that whole process was operating the wholesale produce distribution business right up until the date of this sale, and that New Cross had acquired it on a Saturday and continued in business that following week with the same assets, the same trade name, the same equipment, the same customers.
Let's try it this way. For all of that, New Cross had to pay something. If they didn't pay, who'd be bringing the action against New Cross?
If New Cross didn't pay the...
For the assets that they acquired.
I suppose it would be the banks at that point, unless there was something owing also to Old Cross. There is no indication of the amounts that were due to anyone. As a matter of fact, the asset sale agreement that New Cross submitted to the Bureau at both hearings had all of that information whited out. That was covered over. No one knows how much New Cross paid to any of the banks or to Old Cross, or whether in fact Old Cross received something from the banks as a result of the money paid from New Cross to the banks. So those questions become irrelevant, because New Cross did not make them an issue by presenting any of that evidence before the Bureau's Adjudicating Committee or the Workers' Compensation Board subcommittee hearings. The primary issue here is there's no question that New Cross has a successor in interest. They, by statute and by this court's decision in Lake Erie, a successor in interest is any transferee of a business in whole or in part. So the only issue is there some evidence in this record to support the Bureau's determination that this was a transfer in whole of the entire business of wholesale produce distribution? And when you look at the assets that were excluded from this transaction, it is clear beyond any doubt that the only assets that were excluded had nothing to do with wholesale produce distribution. The error...
Give me an example. I didn't see an example of an asset that was excluded that was not relevant to wholesale distribution of food. What would be one here?
That would be, well, the chosen in action. There was a chosen action in 1989. That had something to do with some stock transfer by certain individuals involved in the corporation and a chosen action against those individuals. That was one of them. And there was a list, a very short list of excluded assets. And we point that out in our brief, and they are summarized by the term anything not having to do with the acquired assets. And of course, when you look at the acquired assets, it includes everything involved in the wholesale produce distribution. So the question here before the court should be, is there some evidence in this record to support the Bureau's conclusion that it was in fact a transfer in whole? And where the Court of Appeals erred was looking and focusing on the language of the Bureau's order that states that many but not all of the assets of Old Crossett were acquired. Well, we submit that that finding of fact is not inconsistent with the conclusion that the entire business of wholesale produce distribution was in fact transferred. Of course, not all of the assets were transferred, but it is clear, and there is plenty of evidence. There is much more than the required sum evidence in a Ames action that this was a transfer in whole of the business. So we would ask this court to apply, to follow its reasoning in Lahiri, to reject the reasoning of Welco, because Welco was a common law, was decided upon common law and not upon any statutory basis, and to recognize that the Bureau was merely making a finding of fact that is not inconsistent with this conclusion, and to also find that based upon this record, there is quote-unquote some evidence, and I submit plenty of evidence, that there was a transfer in whole of the business, and that it was, number one, it would be a complete waste of administrative and judicial resources to send this back to the Bureau for another hearing. And number two, that the limited writ issued by the Court of Appeals should be reversed.
Counsel, Lahiri involved making the so-called successor of the business responsible for payment of premiums for the company that was acquired.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Did it?
Yes.
I thought it had to do with the experience.
In that case, the company was challenging the Bureau's determination that the experience rating of the predecessor corporation would be transferred to the successor corporation.
But that's far different from collecting premiums for the old corporation.
No, it's, we submitted it is the same thing. And as a matter of fact,
How so? I mean, here you're trying to collect a debt that was owed by the defunct corporation. And I'm wondering, what's the threshold event here that constitutes a so-called transfer of business here? Is it the assumption of name? Is it the hiring of the defunct corporation's employees? Or is it servicing their customers? Or do you have to have all of those? At what point
I would submit, Your Honor, that's a good question. I would submit that all of those things are aspects to consider, elements to consider in determining whether the business wholesale produce distribution.
So if you were missing one of them, then what, Tucker case?
Then there's a line drawing depending upon what happened. For example, if in this case Old Crossett had bought the refrigerators and office equipment of New Crossett and decided to put those assets into some other kind of industry, like packaging or something, then they wouldn't have transferred the business.
Say they chose a similar. They hired the employees that used to work for the old corporation, and they bought the reels. But instead of peddling vegetables, they were peddling ice cream from that point forward.
Then
is that a transfer of the business or not?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Is ice cream produce?
I
for that, yeah.
then you get into some...
No, they wouldn't have been.
Some changes.
So the critical thing is they were servicing the same customers.
Well, unfortunately, we don't even have those line, those kinds of line drawings here. We have the same product. There was no change in the business.
Well, yeah, but you're just coming to say it's the same business. What makes that so? That's what I'm asking. What makes it a transfer of the business? When they went to the bank and they said, we're buying assets only. I mean, how does one who wants to pick up assets at a fire sale protect themselves from unknown liability?
It's just gone.
I assume they're not known.
No, they were not. As a matter of fact,
if you went to the courthouse, you could find a record of some indication of
not at the courthouse, to my knowledge. But they could have asked the process, they could have asked the banks, and they could have asked the bureau what the liability was for those retrospective rate of claim years. And as a matter of fact,
you're buying assets.
Right.
Why would you ask the bureau anything other than to check records in the courthouse to see what
they also? Well, that's a good question, Your Honor. But in this case, New Cross did inquire about liabilities, and they did assume liabilities. As a matter of fact, they assumed a significant amount of liabilities that Old Cross owed its suppliers. $5 million worth of liability, so that it continued that business.
They specifically agreed to me.
They specifically agreed to do that.
The purchase.
And they must have inquired as to what that amount was. I'm sure they wouldn't have assumed $5 million worth of debt if they didn't know what the amount was. And in the same way, they could have inquired as to what the workers' compensation plan was for Old Cross and how much, if any, was due to the Bureau of Workers' Compensation under that plan. As a matter of fact, the record shows that 3 weeks after this sale, this purchase, they received a letter from the old company's insurance representative in workers' compensation business. We call it the third-party administrator. And the third-party administrator told New Cross months before the Bureau ever conducted its audit, Shapely Unit Service, and his letter is the very last document in the supplement before the court, tell New Cross that about two retrospective rating plan years, and tell New Cross how much is owed for each year. In other words, how much New Cross could buy out.
I want to go back to the first question. What's the threshold that makes it a transfer of business? For lawyers practicing in this area, they're going to need some advice from us as to what's the tripwire, what constitutes a transfer of business.
According to this court, Your Honor, you've already decided that a transfer of a business is any transfer in full or in part. So I think the tripwire you're looking for here.
That's for purposes of
what
that case is only for purposes of establishing whether or not the rating history traces those employees.
Purpose of that particular case, and we submit that the difference in the issue here does not change the ultimate conclusion that is required, and that is whether or not it was just in the circumstances for New Cross to pay for those obligations of workers' compensation, obligations of workers, employees from Old Cross that New Cross continued to employ, and if this court did not find that this was just in the circumstances, then New Cross will receive a windfall by not paying those workers' compensation premiums and the medical bills that have been paid for those employees.
To have a windfall, you presume that part of the bargain was we're paying less cash for this because we're sucking $100,000 worth of workers' comp liability.
That is something that if we ask this court to tell the prospective successor corporations and their counsel to look for when
you termed the outcome, an outcome adverse to you would be a windfall for the new corporation. How is it a windfall?
New Cross would continue to use those same employees from Old Cross. Those employees were workers who had injuries during those retrospective rating plan years, and due to the fact that their medical claims had been paid and their temporary total or whatever compensation claims had been paid, those workers were able to continue working for New Cross.
So
they might still be off on disability otherwise.
So a succeeding company would be well advised to just say, everybody's out the door, we're hiring all of you.
I don't know if that's a financial and moral decision for the new.
You're making it a tough business decision for anybody to take employees from a company where they buy the assets.
Well, I understand your concern, Your Honor, and it is sort of a tough business decision, but it is a business decision that is known in terms of dollars. It's not the trap for the unwary that this course was faced with in the Blogger decision or in Welco, because in those cases, the amount was not known even at the time of the purchase. But in this case, as shown by the letter from Shapley Unit Service, the amount was known and the amount was finite. And at that time, New Cross could have wiped out the retrospective rating plan obligation for approximately $280,000. Now, they had already assumed $5 million worth of obligations to Old Cross's suppliers in order to continue the business. So we believe that outcome is just in the circumstances in this case.
Thank you, Mr. McDonald.
Thank you.
Mr. Wilkinson, you've saved almost 2 minutes of your time.
Mr. Wilkinson, if we rule for you, what message do we send to lawyers who are structuring corporate mergers or acquisitions of prior experiences? Do we say you don't have to look at it anymore? All you do is get the rating or the experience?
Sure. One of the problems with these types of programs, these retro programs, is they are in fact traps for the unwary, because an employer can be in a retro for a year or 2 years,
yeah,
and then 5, 6, 7 years later, they're in a group rating program. And you say, my goodness, this employer has a very good experience. This employee is doing very well. And then at the end of that year, you get a bill for something that occurred 5 years ago because they entered into a contract.
Yeah, but on the balance sheet corporation being acquired, there's an entry someplace with regard to the retro matter.
Generally not, Your Honor, because these premiums are paid to the Bureau and they're billed once a year, and that amount is generally included in that workers' compensation premium amount. Now, you're absolutely correct. I could go in and I could look at what my normal premium is, and then I could say, why is it so much greater? Of course, you can't do that on a Saturday in June.
No, but you shouldn't be writing law for transactions done on the weekend.
No, I understand that, Your Honor.
We write law for right, a normal business transaction, and as Mr. McDonald said, it seems to me this is something that business people can determine. This isn't something that pops up because it wasn't available to anyone. You can determine it, can't you?
Part of the problem, you can determine it, Your Honor, if you get the right response from the seller of the business. You're correct about that. I would submit to you, though, it is a debt, a contractual obligation like any other debt, and so therefore the general rules of successor employer, i.e. the local rule, should apply to this debt as it does to any other debt. That's what we're arguing, is that this is not something that we should have to worry about as the seller. Now, who is getting the windfall here? Mr. McDonald said that New Cross F is getting the windfall. That's not true. Old Cross F is getting the windfall, aren't they? Because they paid 30% of what they should have paid as a minimum premium, and then they walked away and said, we don't owe you any more money because, you know what, this new person is going to be responsible. That, to me, is the unfortunate part, and that's why in this situation, we're not asking you to overrule Lake Erie as to the experience rating by the way, goes to future premiums, not tax premiums. What we're saying is in a retrospectively rated situation where somebody enters into a contract to pay their premiums over 10 years, that employer is going to continue to be responsible for those premiums and not the new employer.
Okay.
I understand that it exists, Your Honor, but to my knowledge, I don't know that they have any assets. I would suggest that they do not. That's not important. My time has expired, Justice Douglas. The only thing I wanted to point out was on that contract to purchase that is in the record. I would submit to you that all of the elements that you were talking about are in the contract.
I know it's there. That's why I asked him.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you,
Judge.
The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.